My mother, Patricia Ann Martin, was born on April 29th, 1962. She was born at home near Somerset, California, the youngest of nine children given to Anna Jewel Dukes and Cecil Foster. I love that she was born at home, the only of the nine. I pull from this a strength in my heritage, as I also birthed babies at home. Her sisters tell me that she didn't like this story as it spoke of a pregnancy both unplanned and unprepared for. My grandmother hadn't told anyone she was pregnant, and when it was time for my mom to come, the older children were sent running to neighbors for help. But I imagine a bed in a small house on a dirt road and the courage of a mother and daughter both. In my imagination, it was a grand entrance, the very best, actually. My mother was born. But for these nine children born to Grandma Jewel, life was far from grand. They were poor, and their father was an abusive alcoholic. My sweet grandmother nearly died from his violence. And then she left. She left. Sweet touch of grace. In 1964, with six dependent children, though she feared it was against the will of God himself, she left the man she feared would kill her. She worked as a taxi driver and met my Grandpa Charlie, the kindest soul any of us has known. Grandpa Charlie married Grandma in 1966. My mother was four. He loved her children, and then her children's children as his own. He also loved Jesus, martinis, and playing the piano. Though Jewel and Charlie were touched by a special grace at this time, my mother's childhood was not. She was the youngest, the most vulnerable, and somehow left unprotected in a large family. It is a mystery to both of us why and how such horror could be. I can't fathom it, and I am so sorry. At the end of this hard childhood, when she was 18 years old, my mom found love and wanted a baby. It was very important to my mom that I knew she wanted me, and I know my mom never stopped wanting me. This, a testament to her sensitive heart and the scars of her own beginnings. The words planned and wanted were placed on me, and also loved. Isn't it amazing what words can do? She planned me, she wanted me, she loved me. But heroin. Heroin offered her troubled soul the best relief the world can give. And once you've experienced the kind of pain my mother had, you need relief. As I've listened to my mother's story from her own mouth and from the mouths of those who knew her most, I've come to understand why she could not overcome addiction. Those 80s commercials that haunted my childhood are true. No one ever says, "I want to be a junkie when I grow up." It is never planned and always tragic. But here's what I want you to know about my mom. To me, she was the universe, that substance that surrounds the whole world. And it makes sense, doesn't it? My life started within her, and without her, there could be nothing of me. And as the drugs stole everything they could from her, as she realized she couldn't protect me, and when she saw my young life brushing too close to the trauma of her own, she pushed me north, sent to the safety of a stable sister, up, forward, she let me go, farther than she could ever go. She did what only mothers can do. She gave me life. And I will live. I will live this beautiful northern life with my husband and her grandchildren, and I will whisper thanks to a God who redeems all things, even us.
That was Jessica Williams reciting a tribute to her mother. Tonight, we're telling Jessica's story. Jessica, you originally wrote that tribute 2 years ago, and you recited it at a memorial that was held for your mother. Can you tell us a little bit about the circumstances around that?
Yes, so we're just approaching the two-year anniversary of my mother's death. She died on June 25th, 2 years ago. My mother passed away 2 weeks after she had suffered a massive brain aneurysm. And the memorial service that we had was held here in Winnipeg with my friends and family, most of which had never met her. And it was beautiful.
Yeah, and I think the tribute, I guess it's not a poem, but it's more like an essay, but it's so beautiful and tells so much of your mom's story, and it's a little bit of a complicated story between the two of you. And I've known you since you were 19, and there were times or seasons when you knew where your mom was. Sometimes you didn't know where she was. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you would get a call and find out that she was in jail again. And then you would tell me, I just found out she's in jail again. So that's just a little piece of your story, and we'll talk about it, where you came from. But before we do, I think where this piece brings us, where we're at, is actually the story of forgiveness.
Yeah, I had, it was a long road to forgiveness for me towards my mother. But I do think that is like the big lesson that my mom taught me, is what it means to forgive.
And you also, along with your tribute, you made a piece of art in honor of your mother. What was that?
Yeah, so it was actually in the year after she died. I was invited to be a part of a sharing circle here in Winnipeg. And at the end of the sharing circle, we did art pieces. The topic was decolonization. And it was a powerful experience. But one of the pieces I made was a giant dream catcher mobile. And I put it together with the idea that I wanted it to be a picture of forgiveness. And so the mobile was made of two hoops. So there was an outer large hoop that I wrapped in pieces of fabric of my mom's jeans. They were the jeans she was wearing on the night she suffered her aneurysm, and so the hospital had given those clothes to me. And then the inner hoop was wrapped in fabric from the dress I was wearing that same night that I got the call that she was in the hospital. And holding those two hoops together, I weaved a dream catcher, a beautiful dream catcher. I'd never made anything like it. So I kind of taught myself how to do that as I went. There's different pieces of yarn hanging down from there. One thing that was important to me was that I wanted it to be beautiful. So I worked really hard at just picking out things like textures and colors that would be really visually appealing. And at the end of those pieces of yarn, I hung feathers. There are two feathers hanging from each, and they're meant to represent our togetherness But I guess as I was weaving the dream catcher, I thought a lot about how, you know, the tension and the uneven shape that it takes as you go is all a part of it. And it holds us together. And it just became a really powerful visual for me of forgiveness.
Wow. I think, Jess, just you have such a beautiful spirit to be able to do that, and such an artistic side, which I really envy, because you have a way of being able to express, I think, your feelings of both pain and forgiveness and beauty, and you're able to see it. You're able to see that in your past. So I was wondering if you could just sort of tell us a little bit more about your story. You've told us about your mom's story, and I wonder if you could tell it as you would to your beautiful daughter, Jaden, who's now 12 years old. And in a few years, she'll be a little bit more mature and she'll want to know more about you. And I think she probably still knows a lot, like little bits and pieces. But if she were to hear it all at one time, you know, what would you say? What story would you tell her about where you came from?
This is really good for me because I haven't actually figured it out completely how I'll say it, but I'll say what I think. My first thought, that the first thing I would want Jaden to know is that I come from love. And this family that I come from that is so broken in so many ways, or was so broken, they also loved deeply. And sometimes I think that's where a lot of the pain comes from, is just incredibly loving people suffering such trauma. And like when I say that, I would say especially my mom. I think she was maybe one of the most sensitive members of her family. And I don't think she could take the trauma that was happening around her. So I would start there in a kind place, I think. Then it gets a little confusing for me because it's a tragic story, and sometimes I get overwhelmed by it because I often edit my story. I often think that it will be too much for people. And so I say, you know, it's too many bad things. Too many bad things are happening in this story. And I want to like stop it. But anyway, I won't do that. So when I tell my kids my story, I will tell them the whole truth. That will be really important to me. And I think that's been an important part of my healing, is to discover the whole truth. And I really dove into that a few years ago. And so now I have a pretty clear understanding of what that is.
So you were born in California. And you were living with your mom and your dad up until you were how old?
The details are a little bit unclear because they conflict when you talk to different family members. And so what I've done is kind of gathered the truths that I can gather, and then I hold them all. So, I was born to both of my parents, and I have pictures of my, you know, mom and dad with me as a newborn baby.
Yeah, and you showed me the picture of your mom and dad on their wedding day, and they were both beautiful people. Yeah. Your mom was 18 when she got married, yeah. And your dad was 35, yeah. But they were in love.
Yeah. I mean, there's some, I still feel a little bit like, I don't know if I like that, but they were in love. Mm-hmm. And they got married. And my mom was, yeah, I was there too at the wedding. I was saying she was about 4 months pregnant on their wedding day. So, yeah.
So what you, from what you've gathered, how long were you with them? I know you've talked about being sent away just during the summer times for a while.
Not quite.
Okay.
Yeah. but at first I was with them. Yeah, I want to say the first year of my life, for sure I was with both of them. But the drugs started right away. So my mom, you know, she always said that she didn't do drugs while she was pregnant with me. Just smoked a little weed, which the doctor said was fine. And, but soon after I was born, the heroin use started. Yeah, and then the other thing that happened is that their marriage started to fall apart. Like, you know, drugs are like a really crazy thing. And so there was a lot of fighting between them and a lot of drug use. And so, yeah, they separated before I was one, I believe.
And so they were both doing drugs?
Yeah, yeah. My dad the story that my mom tells is that my dad introduced her to drugs. So she was a young girl. But, you know, it hasn't been, like, held up with my dad's truth. So I can't, yeah, say that fully yet.
Okay, so when they split, where does the story go from there?
Yeah, so... I'll try to say this quickly. There was just, it was chaos is what I understand, is that my mom would have me and then my dad would have me and then I'd be left with my, grandparents, and my grandparents had a home where the kids could always come. And so another aunt and uncle were living with my grandparents. And they would take care of me when my mom wasn't around. What I have gathered is that I was taken care of by a variety of people, sometimes left in places. Like an example is a story I was recently told by my dad, actually, is that I was just left with a friend of my mom's, and my mom said, oh, I'll be back in an hour. And 3 days later, I was still there, and she hadn't come. Mm-hmm. And so then this woman had tracked my dad down to come and get me. My dad said, this was just a very recent phone conversation with my dad, and he said, yeah, I had to go and pick you up from places where they didn't even want you. And I had heard that before, actually, but it was really interesting hearing it out of his mouth. And so that kind of went on for about a year, I think. And then my aunt Tina had this encounter with my mom where I had said something to her like, where will I be sleeping tonight? And something just happened inside of her where she said, this can't happen any longer. And so she confronted my mom kind of on the front steps of their house and just said, you can't take her with you. And I think that was the beginning of my separation from my parents.
And so you said in the tribute that your mom sent you north. And is that when you went to go live with your aunt and uncle or with your grandparents?
It's when I went to first live with an aunt and uncle in Oregon. So it was the first trip north. And then eventually I went to live with a different aunt and uncle in Washington State. So, you know, there's that line in there that I love, sent to the safety of a stable sister. Mm. And I have two aunts in mind when I say that line, because one was kind of a step to the next. Mm.
That's really beautiful. Mm. I'm sure you're very thankful for that, for the stability. How old were you when you moved?
I was 3. Yeah, maybe just a couple of months after turning 3. And the other thing that happened that is has always been like critical in my storyline of understanding my story is that my dad had gone to prison. He had been sentenced to 10 years in prison, sometime between 2 and 3 for me. And then before I turned 3, my mom went to prison, and she was sentenced to 2 years. So at that point, I have the documents, like the court records. Custody was given to my grandmother.
Wow. So did you not see either of them for the next, well, your dad for 10 years, and then your mom, did you start to see her again after she got out?
Yeah. So I didn't see my dad for 10 years, but my mom, her sentences were always about 18 months to 2 years. And so she showed up again, you know, came to Washington when I was sometime between 4 and 5, I think is what my aunt has told me. She tried, even at one point, she had tried to like get a job in Washington, and I had lived with her for a while. But then all of a sudden she decided to go back to California, and so she kind of dropped me off with my aunt again and said, I have to go. And that's the only time that happened. But a couple other times she wanted me to return to California with her, but it never seemed right to my aunt, so I didn't.
So is that something that you remember, that incident of when your mom tried to have you with her for a while and she went back to California, or is that something that they've told you about?
That's something they told me about. What I remember is this vague like memory of just playing in the yard, and my mom just appears like driving up the dirt road, and it's so interesting to me because that's how I always imagined it would happen. I often say as a child, I felt like I was just waiting, like one day. And a line that I don't know if it was told to me often, but it stuck with me was, "One day your mom will come back for you." And so I have this visual of her showing up in a car, but I don't remember actually living with her or then being dropped off again. So.
Okay, so to go back to the mistake I made earlier about the summers, yeah. Did you spend some summers with your mom at some point?
Yeah, so my childhood kind of went on, but most summers I went to California for a period of time, and I would be staying with my grandparents, and I'd visit both sets of grandparents, actually my dad's parents and my mom's parents, and I would see my mom. If she was in prison, we would go and visit her there, so it might just be that I saw her like for 2 hours one summer, but it kept up a stable like rhythm for me that like in the summer you go to California, you see your mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Jess, I know that there's also some other darker moments in this story that you haven't mentioned yet. Some things that happened to you mm-hmm. as a child. Mm-hmm. Would you talk about it?
Yeah. So, there was some abuse that happened when I was really young, maybe 2. And I think all I can say about that, and I want to say because it is a part of me and my story, is that there was some form of sexual abuse that happened. It is believed to have happened when I was about 2. And it's one of the reasons, for my mom and my mom's narrative, her retelling of the story, it's one of the reasons she felt she had to send me somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Because my mom had suffered a tremendous amount of sexual abuse as a child, and it terrified her that would happen to me. So,
I think that in itself is incredible, because we do hear other stories of where there's been generations of abuse, but even parents who were abused, they turn their face away when it happens to their children. Mm. And I don't know why that is, but I think that's amazing that she did that for you, that she recognized it. And even though she didn't have the ability to protect you herself mm-hmm. because of where she was and those things, but she did her best. Mm-hmm. That's really amazing. Mm-hmm. So you said your story goes on mm-hmm. and you're living in Washington with your aunts. Did they have other children or were you growing up alone?
I did kind of grow up as an only child with my aunt and uncle. But they had, my aunt had a son who was 16, I believe, when I moved in with her, and he was kind of in and out of the house. He'd moved out already. And then my uncle had a daughter from a previous marriage, and she would come every other weekend. And so my bedroom had two beds in it. We shared a room. So in that way, there were other kids around, or at least one other. But for the most part, I was alone. It was a very quiet home. Yeah.
And then we mentioned in an earlier podcast that that you sort of ended up leaving there mm-hmm. at one point, and you ended up, I know you stayed with some friends for a while, and then sort of into the foster system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so kind of talking about elementary years, I lived with my aunt and uncle, and went to see my family in the summer, and that all kind of built up to one summer between fifth and sixth grade. I went to live with my mom for the whole summer, and we thought she was clean and she was remarried, and you know, everyone just thought she was doing well. And when I got there, she was not well. And so that summer was very traumatic. It was full of drug use and alcohol and violence. And I think went into shock in some way. I didn't talk about it. The summer ended with my mom and I kind of lost on the road between Sacramento to Washington State. I think it was like 3 days my aunt and uncle didn't know where we were. And it's a, you know, it's a 12-hour drive, maybe 14 hours from Sacramento to where we lived. And I remember that ride. I was 11, and my mom was so, I don't know if she was withdrawing or what was happening, but she couldn't stay awake at the wheel, and she just couldn't drive. And so we just kept pulling over, and she would sleep for a long time. And then we met strangers on the way. It was just all bizarre. But I just share that part to kind of highlight how bad it was. Like, I don't want to go into detail, but it was really awful. The next summer, I went again. And this time I wasn't living with her. I was living, like, staying with my grandmother. But she was in and out, and I would go, you know, to overnights with her. I can't quite remember. I think I might have even still gone for like a week at a time to her place, but I'm not sure now. And also that summer I met my dad for the first time. So I guess I'm just trying to point out that I was a 12-year-old girl, and I had experienced a lot of trauma that I wasn't talking about. That same summer that I met my dad for the first time, I was sexually abused by a friend of my mom's. Just all of this happened, and I didn't talk about it. And a year later, I ran away from my aunt and uncle's house. And I didn't know what I was doing. I think I was in so many ways. I look at Jaden and I think, oh, I was just a normal adolescent girl who was fighting with her parents and kind of hated them and wanted to get away. But there was much more going on than that. And so So that's what happened, and I can't share a lot of details around that because it was all very painful for me and my family. But in the end, I ended up, only 1 month in an actual foster home. And then my family like actually pulled me out of the foster system and put me into a friend's home. So it was a family friend. But it was like an unofficial foster home. They took in, I mean, there were two other teenagers living there while I was there that were not a part of their family. So I often just refer to that home as my foster family. Mm. So.
Wow. Gosh, there's just so much there, Jess. Mm-hmm. And and all that teenage everything, it's just so much. So hard to process as a teenager, all those emotions and fears and anger and all of those things. And so, but then your story sort of starts to turn around. I don't know if that's how you see it, but I know that at some point there, you were going to church, or maybe you had gone always, I don't know, but I know that you felt like you had a very personal encounter with Jesus at some point in your high school time, mm-hmm. and then it felt like you had a calling.
Yeah, so I had gone to church actually my whole life because of a neighbor, and actually it's the same neighbor that I ended up living with, drove a church van around the neighborhood, bringing kids to church every Sunday. When I was 15, I went to a Bible camp, and I went up. Yeah, I did. I had one of those experiences that was life-changing. I went up, we call it an altar call. And I went up and I knelt down and I closed my eyes and I said, God, what do you want me to do? It was just a really honest, question. And I heard the word missionary and I saw the word missionary. And I had never, I came from a small country church. I didn't even know really what that meant, except that it did mean that I wouldn't be a school teacher in the suburbs with three kids. And that was my plan. And I do remember that moment just saying, okay. Mm. Yeah.
Well, and I'm so thankful for that part of your story, because that is what brought you to Teen Missions. And that's where we met. So regardless of anything else, if you ever became a missionary or didn't or whatever, I'm thankful for that part of your story. So I do want to bring it back though, Jess. So now this is years later, you have your own family now, a beautiful family, a 12-year-old girl, 10 and 8 are your two sons. And but I know you had a chance to talk with your mom before she died. Mm-hmm. And a brain aneurysm, you weren't expecting that. That was out of the blue. So you didn't know it was going to be your last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the years, we just ended off at, I go to Bible school and I'm 18. And then I got married and started having kids. And I will say, during my 2 years of Bible school, I had a loving posture towards my mom. I don't know if you remember, but I sent her a Bible in prison and I had underlined all these verses, and she was in prison and writing me letters about the church, the chapel that she attended there. And I think she had had a conversion experience. I don't think it was her first conversion experience, but she had one and she was really into Jesus at the time. And so I had sent her a Bible and all that. And so my posture towards her at that time was a forgiving, loving posture. But when I had my daughter, everything changed in me. I didn't know it was coming, but now when I think about it, even as I was preparing for Jaden's birth, my mom came to see me the week after Jaden was born, and somehow inside of myself, I felt like I can't birth this baby with my mom here. So already there was like the beginning of something rising up in me that was like some kind of anger that was like a big no. So I think Jaden's birth marked the beginning of me grieving what had actually happened to me.
So I think like what I'm hearing is that there was, even though you had a loving posture, there was unresolved just trauma for you on your side, like wounds that just weren't healed but were maybe buried. Yeah. But you did, you pursued. So maybe your conversations with your mom weren't all that frequent because you needed space and time to heal. And I think that's okay. And you had to be okay with that and to admit that that was okay, that you could only talk to your mom maybe a few times a year or once every couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then what happened towards the end?
Yeah, so towards the end, I would say even the last couple of years before my mom died, I had really embarked on some kind of healing journey. And a part of that, and it kind of started with me being really intentional about phoning her and then not giving up on the conversation, because so often when we would talk, we would say nothing. Just, oh, hi, how are you? Like, just nothing of substance. And so we weren't, yeah, I just felt like we don't know each other. Like, yeah, there was nothing to say. Mm-hmm. So I really pushed into that. Something rose up in me where I tried to reach her. Mm-hmm. And it actually started with me playing her a song. Mm-hmm. So I had called her one day and she was like, oh, I'm tired. And usually I would like shut down, like, because instantly I'd feel like rejected and like, okay, you're too tired to talk. Like, we'll talk later. But that day was like, oh, well, you're up now. Why don't you go make yourself some coffee? I'll play you this song. And I played her a song that made me think of her. And by the end of the song, she was crying. And so that started this journey of, like, I realized, oh, there's a window, there's a way. There's a way to deeper conversation. And, I started being really bold and asking her all of my questions. And she told me the truth. She would answer whatever. And if for a season it was really overwhelming because it was all so painful. But at the end of it, I knew the story. Mm. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, all of that led up to my mom living in Minot, North Dakota, and I had the opportunity to go and see her a couple of months before she died, and I she was living there, and I knew I wanted to see her. Just a lot of the things I had been learning. I was a part of the School of Justice that year, and I had just been learning so much about seeing people beyond their brokenness. And learning about how broken we all are. This idea of finding how similar we all are. So I felt like I had changed, like I was a different person. I know you're not ever really a different person, but in that moment I felt like there's something has happened to me. I'm not who I was. And I wanted to go and see her. But it was kind of a random, like a really random, but I would say, divine act that I went. I was at a party for Becky, who is our one of the pastors at our church here. Her and her husband are. And so I was at a party for her birthday, and I just happened, someone was talking like, oh, well, where's your mom these days or something? And I said, oh, she's in Minot, North Dakota. And Becky was like, I'm going to Minot. And she was like, yeah, my son has a basketball game there. I'm going there. And, it was like a month or two away, but she already knew she was going. She was like, I'm just driving alone, and I have a hotel. You should just come with me. And so I was thinking, yes, I would love that. So, yeah, that's how I ended up getting there in the first place. So already I feel like it's kind of soaked in grace. And then I spent time with my mom. She was, living in a camper, in a campground. And she was out on bail. I feel like I should say what the state of her life was at the time. She was out on bail, that she had been,
She hadn't really escaped yet the cycle. Right. She was still in it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So Becky and I showed up at the campground, and Becky got to meet my mom. And then I ended up spending a lot of time there with her while we were in Minot for the basketball games. And my mom and I we had this moment. We were walking just from like the campground bathroom back to the camper. And she said, Jess, I just want to tell you. And I could tell that she had been waiting and that she wanted to say some words to me. And so, yeah, she just had this apology for me, and it was simple. I mean, it really took a minute, mm-hmm. but she said, I'm sorry for, how did she say it? She said, I know that my life has caused you pain, mm-hmm. and even in ways that I don't know, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry. And I really felt the presence of God, and I was able to look at her and I just looked at her and I said, I forgive you. And in my spirit, I feel like this is really crucial for me, that in my spirit that I knew that what I was saying is yes. I was like, yes, it's true. Everything you just said is true. Everything you just said and more is true. And I forgive you. And so that was really amazing. And then when I left, when I said goodbye for the last time the next morning, I took her out, like outside, we're saying goodbye at the car. And I said, Mom, I want you to know that I heard you. Mm. And that I mean that I forgive you. And then I like looked her in the eyes and I said, and I see you as a survivor. And my kids are going to know your story. And then she said, okay, you're making me cry, go. And we hugged and I left. And I was crying when I left. And that was our last conversation. So,
what a powerful story, mm-hmm. Jess. A story of like forgiveness and seeing each other, mm-hmm. as adults, women, mm-hmm. her being able to say, like, I know I hurt you, my life hurt you. It wasn't just that she acted in a way that hurt you, but it was her life in general, mm-hmm. the cycle she was in, mm-hmm. hurt you. And what a powerful thing to say, that by you saying, I forgive you, it was just an act of recognition, mm-hmm. of saying, yes, those things did happen to me, mm-hmm. and they did hurt. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Mm-hmm. It's true that your life hurt me. And I know that you're not like finished. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not just a one time, I forgive you and it's done. Mm-hmm. It's still an ongoing process of healing, mm-hmm. and continuing to forgive. I'm sure you probably have things that might come up just in the middle of, you know, cooking dinner or whatever, that maybe you have to forgive all over again. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and I get stuck in places still. But I have this, I feel like a path has been formed, you know, in my spirit. Like, it's there now. And I know what it means and what it feels like when I go down that path. But I definitely still choose other paths at times, or maybe not even choose them, but just they are the natural way that I go. When I'm hurt or kind of feeling some form, like when I'm triggered, I would say, mm-hmm. because just all survivors of trauma will be triggered at times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing that I would say, I think, is that I'm really aware of how we are able to tell our stories changes over the years. And so, you know, this is how I'm talking about my story today. And I think as time goes on, and maybe as I learn other parts, I might say it differently, or even as I change. You've known me all these years, and I know even back at, like, in our teen missions days, I was sharing my story, and I think, you know, probably many things have stayed the same, but I have a different way of talking about it now. Mm. So.
Well, I just want to thank you so much, Jessica, for sharing your story, for opening up and being so vulnerable. I think that this is a story that that will touch many people for many different reasons. And it sort of just hits at the heart. And we see a lot of beauty and forgiveness. And just it's just a powerful story that I want more people to hear. And I hope that you keep telling it over the years, and I would be so honored to even be with you in the next retelling. Mm-hmm. If it's 20 years down the road, mm-hmm. That would be so amazing to me. So thank you for that, and thank you not only for that, but for hosting me for the last mm-hmm. month and a couple of days. I'm leaving tomorrow, and I'm so brokenhearted about that, but maybe I'll make my way back. We're hoping that I will reroute and come back this way. But yeah, thank you so much, Jessica. Yeah.
Thank you, too. Thank you for, you know, you've said to me so many times over the years that that you think that I'm amazing. You say all the right things, and you give me courage. And it does more than I think you know.
Okay, so I hate to break up the sentimentality, but you've been listening to Voices from the Road. And if you want to hear more stories like this one, you can subscribe on iTunes, Voices from the Road, and I will be back on the road tomorrow. So hopefully we'll be able to bring you some more stories like this one. Thanks for listening.